This presentation has been previously broadcast.
The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show.
On Relevant Radio.
The Drew Mariani Show. On Relevant Radio.
You know, tell others about the broadcast. If you enjoy that hour, that time in which we get together to pray, if you want to be brought up to speed on the biggest issues of the day, the most important issues of the day through a moral lens, then this is the place to turn to and get others plugged in. If you say, hey, I really like the coverage you give, or I like the approach, you know, I try never to be partisan. I know some people think we are, but I think the Catholic Church and the principles of Jesus Christ, it's never partisan. It crosses both sides of the aisle, depending where you are. So often I'm here to champion the oppressed, to uphold the dignity of the human person, to draw people back to God. And that's why when I heard a story, and here's the problem with, I think, Americans, and this is not a bang on us because we're a great nation and a generous people, right? I love our country. I take a bullet for this great nation of ours. But, you know, when things are out of sight, they're out of mind. And I don't blame people for this. I point the finger at the media. We do get some coverage, not a lot, but we do get some coverage of what's happening around the world. I guess it really depends what kind of media you consume. You know, we spoke to the Prime Minister, Huldayar was with me about a situation that's happening in China with these re-education camps. I've invited him to come back. I want to tell you what's happening because I saw a package and I want to place some of this for you. I'll give you a cautionary warning. May not be suitable for little ears, but I think you need to hear this. There was a woman, I'll butcher her name. It's Tersune. I think her last name is Ziawodun. And she, Zarwudin, I think. Is that Jake Zarwudin or it doesn't matter. You know, the bottom line is she was a victim and somehow or other managed to escape the so-called re-education camps that China had set up in the province of Xinjiang. You know the story. If you haven't, basically the Chinese are dominating the native Uyghur people, the population there. They're enslaving them. They are abusing them. And China claims, oh, we're not doing that. No, these are camps, you know, and these are re-education camps. You know, we're here to help the Uyghurs. We just want them to adjust to being Chinese. But the reality is very different. You know, Tersune told the BBC, they did a report, after she escaped, she told a horrifying tale. And again, caution, as I get into some broad details, and I play a little bit of audio for you. She was grabbed off the streets, put into one of these re-education camps, forced to learn about the president, Xi Jinping, and hear about how great China was over and over again, brainwashing. She was raped, gang raped, multiple times in the short period that she was there. Women there are having their ovaries removed. There's forced sterilization. And she said any woman under 40 has been a victim of this type of abuse, you know, this rape. I just can't imagine my wife or my daughters, you know, being grabbed up and I'm powerless to protect or help them. I can't imagine the torment that the women go through, let alone their loved ones. She claims that there is systematic rape going on. She said sometime after midnight, men in suits and masks, they would come into the cells and they would select the women that they wanted. And then they would take them down the corridor to a black room where there was no surveillance cameras. You know how surveilled China is with their cameras, right? And by chance, by providence, I was surfing the channels after the pledge drive last Friday night. And I came across a segment. Brett Baer was doing a segment on his program, Special Report, on Fox News. And they did an interview with this woman. I want you to hear this. I think you should. She'll paint a picture of what is ultimately unfolding in the country. And unfortunately, right now, a majority of the world is turning a blind eye. That's not entirely true because the U.S. is aware of this. But let me just put this into context. Again, here she is telling her story. We'll talk much more about it. Listen.
Tersune Ziawodun is a survivor of the secretive Chinese camps where over 1 million Uyghur Muslims have been detained. Now, safely in America, she is telling her story, hoping to save others.
We are humans, but the way they torture these girls, and even boys, it's like we're animals.
Ziawodun was living in northwest China, hoping to become a nurse, when she says she was grabbed off a road and thrown into a camp. Her only crime was her religion. For a month, she endured forced re-education, learning about the greatness of China and President Xi hour after hour when she was released because of an illness. A few months later, she was taken back in and says everything was different.
First, they stripped off my clothing. Then, they tore out my earrings so my ears were bleeding. But I didn't feel the pain. I felt worse for one elderly woman, like a grandmother. They stripped everything off her, and she kept falling on the ground, and they kept pushing her and pulling her up, and she kept falling down.
What came next, she says, was worse. 9 months of gang rape, violent beatings and torture, even forced sterilizations.
Any woman under 40 was raped. Everyone in the camp experienced this, and of course, I did too. I was beaten, I was kicked and stamped on, once so much on my private parts that I was bleeding. I have had to have my ovaries removed.
She says around 10,000 were in her camp, about a dozen people were held in each cell, and most nights someone was abused or disappeared. After 9 months, she was released and fled China. She says she cannot forgive what was done to her.
I have finally realized that there's her mental torture and physical torture. They have no hearts.
The Chinese government simply insists that these camps are de-radicalization and counter-terrorism. The US government said a month ago that this is genocide. For her part, Tersine just wants to get her story out so that she can help those still stuck there.
Absolutely horrific, tragic story. And of course, the BBC reported in June of last year that the Uyghur women with more than the legally permitted number of children, imagine if you have your quota, if you've exceeded, if you have also, by the way, any woman who has not exceeded birth quotas, they were involuntarily fitted for IUDs coerced by the government, the officials there, to receive sterilization surgery. Many of these are forced into slave labor camps, or they're forced to pick cotton by hand and do all sorts of other menial labor. You might remember that the video that you may not have seen this. It was there's a train, or they're at a train depot waiting to transport these people, and you would think it was a concentration camp. Hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of these people, because of their religion, zip tied with their hands behind their back, blindfolded, waiting to be transported to these re-education camps. This is going on today. This is going on today. And there's genocide unfolding. That's what the U.S. is saying. This is a human rights issue of just a magnitude beyond anything, I think, that is being reported. And it needs some attention. So I'll call you to do a couple things: to pray, to contact your elected officials, and to be aware of this. Do your own due diligence, your own research. Check this out. I've invited to join me today the Prime Minister of East Turkestan's government in exile, Salih Hudayar. He's been with me in the past a couple times, and I've invited him back just to bring us up to speed on the latest. If you want to learn more about him, by the way, it's east-turkestan.net if you want to learn a little bit more. Prime Minister, thank you again for your time. I'm always grateful for the time you make for the show. I saw this report. Again, it just pushed my button. It made me really want to talk about it. Maybe you can give us some perspective as well. I'm glad the BBC is reporting on this. What is the latest? Where's the U.S. government on all this? And I'll let you just take the platform.
Firstly, thank you for having me back on. This report, we all, feared that, things like this would happen in the camps, especially, based on previous experiences under the Chinese regime. But we didn't want to even think about it. And honestly, hearing this, it made my blood boil. Yep. Because I have, I have a wife, I have, a mother, I have sisters, I have female relatives that are, in East Turkestan at this very moment. And I don't even want to think about, what's happening. But, this is something that all of our people in the diaspora, I, like myself, like many other Uyghurs, we cannot sleep, because our people are actually dying. Her female relatives are, probably being, raped at this moment, and we can't do much, we can't even do anything to really save them, because the international community, that speaks about human rights, is too busy making excuses, ignoring this genocide, and ignoring our cries for, begging for help. The U.S. government, the State Department, they, you know, condemned this, and they said that they were deeply concerned. But, you know, being deeply concerned is not enough. You know, aside from, you know, raping these women by the Chinese security forces, they're also selling these women, you know, Chinese male civilians from the outside can come into these camps and pay, you know, the Chinese security forces wow. a few bucks and pick out whoever, you know, they want to wow. rape. So China is profiting from the rape, you know, of women in these concentration camps. And this is unacceptable. No government, no human being, you know, especially if they think about themselves, you know, think about your daughters, think about your sisters, think about your mothers. And this is what I want to say to these politicians. What are you waiting for? What more do you need to take action?
Well, I hope they are listening. I hope, as a fellow American here, I hope all of you who are listening to me, you call your elected official and say, hey, look, what are you doing about this? There is genocide. There is rape. There is torture. There's slave labor going on. What are we doing? I'll take a few phone calls from you, too, in a minute. If you want to join us, I'll open the phones, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I know one of the things we could do is probably boycott. I mean, for many years, the Chinese government have been carrying out this program, and it is a program of ethnic discrimination and of cleansing. But they also, from what we've talked about, I know in the past, they're enslaving these people to pick cotton. And again, I don't know why they're doing it by hand, but they've got 2 million Uyghurs supposedly in these re-education camps, so they're no longer a threat to China. The products that they manufacture, you know, the stuff that we buy here as Americans, what is it, Prime Minister? Is it cotton? What are the other things? I know that didn't we put sanctions on their cotton imports? Or fill me in on what they are exporting to the U.S. and what we could possibly do.
Yes, the U.S. has, you know, banned cotton products from, you know, that are from China, essentially, because 80% of China's cotton production comes from East Turkestan, which is about 20% of the global supply. So, you know, T-shirts that you buy that are made in China from cotton, most likely it's from East Turkestan, made by the slave labor of Uyghurs. In addition to that, you have, you know, electronic components like, you know, components for, you know, Apple computers, Apple, you know, iPhones, and other electronic companies like Acer, Samsung, and so forth. And even, you know, the shoes, like if you're a Nike fan, the Nike shoes that you're wearing, most likely it's made from the slave labor of Uyghurs. Wow. If you're an Adidas fan, same thing. If you wear Skechers, you know, we actually have videos of Uyghurs being forced, you know, to make Skechers in these factories, slave labor factories. And all of these are products that we are consuming. Yep. And we have a bill that is still stuck in the Senate. It's been stuck from, you know, since September. And you have companies like Apple, Costco, Nike, Coca-Cola, and others spending millions of dollars lobbying against this bill, trying to, weaken it to make it essentially ineffective so that these companies can continue business as usual.
Our brothers and sisters in China are suffering right now. I'm talking about the Uyghur people. The Chinese government has been carrying out a program of discrimination against the ethnic people known as Uyghurs. And they've been singled out not for receiving the same kind of government benefits as others, but there's been a campaign of moving ethnic Han Chinese men into the region where these people live in order to just eradicate the race. This is about ethnic eradication. It's about control. You've known about the internment camps. I just shared with you what happened in some of those. I won't go into that grisly detail again. The Chinese love to call these, and I love the power of words. You know that? Re-education camps? Let me translate that for you. AKA concentration camp. That's what that is. It's a modern-day concentration camp You know, the BBC's been reporting on this. The British newspaper, The Guardian, they published a story not too long ago on, you know, a woman who had moved to France with her husband, her two daughters, and 10 years, you know, of living there. She reached retirement age, so she went to the bank where she had worked. She had to go back to China in order to sign documents so she can get her retirement. It turned out to be a ruse. The Chinese authorities photographed her daughter at a demonstration against Chinese abuses of the Uyghurs in Paris. So they arrested the mother, put her in one of those camps. And you just heard the horrors of what takes place in those camps. She was there for 2 years. You talk about torture. And her description of what happened is horrific. It's basically group torture, sleep deprivation, amongst other things. I said I won't go into all those details. And, of course, they're using these people for slave labor and so much more. I'm joined today by the prime minister, and it's a delight to have him back, of East Turkestan's government in exile. Prime Minister Salih Hudayor joins me today. And before we grab the calls, I want to get right into these calls because we only have a few minutes here for everybody. This is also, it's about control, it's about land, it's about ethnic cleansing. Do you want to give perspective for everyone on this? It's not just about the Muslim religion.
No, what China's been doing, I mean, this is a systematic campaign of colonization and genocide. I mean, this has been ongoing for 71 years, slow motion. It's just only in recent years that China began to ramp it up, seeing that East Turkestan is strategically located. It's the cornerstone of China's multi-trillion-dollar Belt and Road Initiative, you know, to achieve its so-called national rejuvenation. Yep. And seeing that, you know, other countries in the world would want to, you know, would see this as a threat to their own national security. So China is fearful that those countries in the free world might, you know, support the people of East Turkestan to regain their independence. And so effectively, they have taken this extreme final solution to prevent, you know, the independence of East Turkestan, right, as it's stated in its national defense strategy.
Right. Let's do this. We'll grab a couple quick calls for you as well. And if you want to join the conversation, feel free to dial in. I want to thank everyone for their patience. Monica, listening in Minneapolis. Monica, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm heading out shopping today, and we were going to go clothes shopping. And I'm listening to your show, and this is devastating. And I had heard about the Uyghurs, and I'd like to know, so when I'm looking for items, is something made in the USA enough, or is that still cotton that is picked by these enslaved people? I feel like I just have to search to find something that is not having anything to do with participating in this.
Prime Minister, I'll let you respond.
Well, the simplest thing to do would be to avoid at all costs, you know, as best as you can, buying anything that's made in China. As far as, you know, products that are made here in the United States that are made from cotton, as of, you know, November, December, or October, actually, October, November, cotton products or cotton from East Turkestan has been banned by the United States. So previously, it's really unsure. But from now on, we can all rest assured that if it's made in the United States, it's not made, you know, from the cotton that was produced, you know, picked by the slave labor of Uyghurs.
All right, Monica, thank you for doing something. I'm delighted that you are going to make that sacrifice. Maria, I'll try to get you back on in Chicago. I know you've been holding the longest. Good afternoon.
Hi there. Well, I have a similar question, but another question that I've thought about is, could you make available to the listeners of Velvet Radio and all people a sample letter that we can send to, and which specific legislators should we write to? Here in Illinois, they're very liberal, all of them that I know. U.S. senators from Illinois, or is it the state senators from Illinois, or
that's
I don't
wonderful.
Even know who to write a letter to, but if there was a letter or a petition that I could sign online, I would like to do that.
Good for you.
And I wonder if you could I think there is a website. It says petitions.whitehouse.gov. Maybe you can post it on there.
All right. Maria, thank you for bringing that up. It's a great point, and it's a great conversation to have right now with you, Prime Minister. Look, I know you've been the tip of the spear on this. You've been really raising awareness. What is the best thing we can do? I mean, who do people write to, and what do you have going right now that can amplify the voice of the individual?
The best thing that we can do right now is to, you know, spread awareness, obviously, inform others, but also to write our, you know, senators that are at the, you know, national level in Congress, telling them to, you know, immediately pass or urgently pass the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act. The House has already passed it. It's passed overwhelmingly in the House. The Senate, it's just stuck because you have different companies, yes, multi-billion-dollar companies, you know, spending millions of dollars lobbying against this bill. But at what point are we going to, you know, pick profits over, you know, our humanity?
Right. So what are some of these companies? I know we talked about cotton. China's cotton crop is a fifth of the world's supply. I mean, that's how massive it is. And it's hard to avoid that sometimes. But somebody had called in. We had a listener that called in, made a comment off the air to my call screener and said that Tim Cook from Apple is complicit in this. What about these major tech companies or groups like Apple? What role do they play?
So Apple spent hundreds of thousands of dollars already lobbying against this bill. Many of the electronic, you know, components that are used to build the iPhone or build Apple products are outsourced to Chinese companies, which are using, you know, the forced you know, labor or the slave labor of Uyghurs. Apple is not the only one. I mean, even Coca-Cola, car companies like Volkswagen has a plant. And within, you know, in East Turkestan, they have a Volkswagen plant in East Turkestan. And around, you know, within a 15-mile radius, there are dozens of concentration camps. And even Volkswagen CEO, you know, They ignored it. And of course, this is a company that was doing business with the Nazis during, you know, the Holocaust. If you visit us, visit our website, either east-turkestan.net or National Awakening, follow us on, you know, Twitter, send us a message at etawakening or etexile.gov. We will happily send you all available materials that you might need.
All right. You know, Jake, can you put some of that info up? Get it from the Prime Minister. We'll put it on our Twitter handle if you weren't able to all write that down, at Drew Mariani Show. You can follow me at Drew Mariani as well. Ray in Chicago is saying his son lives in China and he's oblivious to this. I found that fascinating. Prime Minister, thank you for what you're doing. We'll stay on top of this and call people both to action and to prayer. But I'll be back on the other side. Stay with me.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
It really grieves me that this question needs to be asked. It's understandable that it's being asked, but it should be known by everyone that Catholics don't support anything that advocates for an injustice or deprivation of the basic human right, such as the right to life.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, it's great to be with you today. Did you hear about what Nancy Pelosi had to say regarding the Eucharist? And again, look, I don't want to throw stones at people. You know that. But I do want to be very clear on what the church teaches, and I do think we have an obligation to speak the truth and to speak it with love. And I think, as you believe, you know, as I believe, that the Eucharist is the source and summit of our faith. You know, last week there was more controversy over the question of pro-abortion politicians and communions. I touched on it briefly. I haven't dwelt on it in great detail, but it came in the context of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi saying that she basically agrees with a letter that the Cardinal Luis Ladaria, who heads up the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith, sent to Archbishop Jose Gomez, the president here in our country, the United States Catholic Bishops, USCCB. basically outlined principles for the bishops to look at this question as a whole. And Cardinal Ladaria, he wrote the letter at the request of Cardinal Blaise Supich of Chicago and Joseph Tobin of Newark, who wanted his intervention because, you know, the bishops have been discussing this issue a lot lately. And look, Joe Biden's making it hard for him. The White House press secretary, or press spokeswoman, I should say, Jen Psaki, says that Biden wants to codify Roe. He wants to, the administration's going to go ahead and do that. So, you know, this is turning up the water, I think, for our nation's bishops. And the bishops are also going to be talking about this in their June meeting, and we'll see what happens there. But, you know, in a few moments, Archbishop Cordiglione is going to be joining me. He is Nancy Pelosi's bishop, too, and I'd love to get his take. But listen to the bold stance that Archbishop Olmsted of Phoenix took when he was asked about pro-abortion politicians receiving the communion. This was on Pro-Life Weekly not too long ago.
Well, I think we need to speak up, especially about the Eucharist, about being such a great gift from God, and that we have to have a deep, deep reverence in our own hearts for Christ. And if we have any sense that there's actions that are going on that are directly contrary to an appreciation of the Eucharist, that we need to speak up about that. It's the great treasure that we have a church. So we need to be defending that. And then we need to do all we can to help those who may be engaged in that activity to understand why it's wrong and why it's not good for their own souls either. I think that I have a duty. I think we bishops have a duty to speak as pastors. We're not politicians, we're pastors. And that means the care of souls is our first concern, both the good of souls and then anything that could be a scandal to them or could mislead them about what's true and good and beautiful.
Yeah. That was, again, the great Archbishop Olmsted. And again, I ask you to pray for all of our bishops. They're in a very difficult position. Archbishop Olmsted, very clear, very charitable, very kind. Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione was on the show, I think it was about 2 weeks ago. He came out with a letter that he published for his archdiocese. It was clear. It was bold. It was charitable and loving. Nancy Pelosi, as I was saying, is a member of his diocese, and the letter that he published states that no politician who supports abortion should receive communion until they repent of their position. That's just church teaching, right? That's nothing new. It's not to me, it's not controversial. So he is out with a response to Speaker Pelosi, saying that she basically agrees with, you know, Cardinal Ladaria's letter. And the Archbishop's response? Good, he says, because I do too. So that means we have a common place from where we can start talking. I love it. I love that. The great Archbishop is with us today. Your Excellency, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hey, thank you so much. Can you sum up for those who are maybe not up to speed on the issue what Cardinal Ladaria said in his letter that Speaker Pelosi was so willing to agree to?
Yes, he first spoke about, as bishops are discerning the situation of Catholics prominent in political life who espouse evils such as abortion, to follow the principles that were laid out in the letter of the then Cardinal Ratzinger back in 2004, a private letter to the U.S. bishops, which spoke about having to engage the politician in conversation. First of all, he said that to promote abortion and euthanasia is a formal cooperation in a grave sin.
Yeah.
So this is a very serious matter for, I would say, any Catholic who does that, all the more so any Catholic in public life. And that to have, in the best situation, the bishop have a conversation and try to help them understand the evil that they're helping to perpetrate and move them to a change of heart. And if after many attempts that proves fruitless, then the bishop is to declare that the person not be admitted to communion. He also spoke about the need for the bishops to dialogue among themselves before deciding a national policy, and so that the bishop's authority in his own diocese is recognized and is respected, and in order to preserve unity. So I would point out that what we're deliberating on in the USCCB is not a national policy, but rather a document that would reinforce and clarify the teaching of the church and the bishop's authority and responsibility in this matter.
So really, there won't be one blanket policy that applies across, you know, the country. It will be left up to individual bishops then to speak to their these wayward politicians. Joe Biden had announced, or his press spokeswoman, Jen Psaki, indicated that the administration plans on codifying Roe v. Wade. You know, we have Nancy Pelosi. There are a number of other people as well. Will it be up to the individual bishop? And I'm assuming most bishops do that. I would think if I was a bishop of a diocese, I had somebody, let's say President Biden or someone else in, you know, is one of my flock in love and charity, I would speak to them. Is that being done now? And how will this document, you know, make a difference? Will it empower the bishops more? I mean, or make clear the teaching to those who are wayward? Maybe put that into context or clarity for me if you could.
These conversations do happen. Many bishops have had these conversations. I think this document, my hope is that it would give support to a bishop who is engaging in this and might have to make that very unpleasant decision, that because the point of this letter, again, is reinforcing church teaching and the bishop's responsibility and authority in his diocese, so it would be a support for him. There are some differences of opinion hopefully there's no differences of opinion about the church teaching, and that people formerly cooperating in grave evil should not present themselves for communion. There are differences of opinion about if and when to apply that discipline. And a bishop in his own particular situation, given the individual, given the situation in his own diocese, there's a whole number of factors he has to weigh in making that decision. So I would hope this document would give support and clearer perception of legitimacy of a bishop who does make such a decision.
Right. Now, I know you cited then Cardinal Ratzinger's letter from 2002 that confirmed that consistently advocating for abortion and euthanasia, it's not just abortion, that constitutes formal cooperation in grave sin, which you referenced a little bit earlier. What will that mean for those who are engaging or who are doing that? Does it lead to, gosh, I don't want to say excommunication. Is there, where does it lead to? What happens?
What I think we need to do is raise the profile of the evil that abortion is.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've become so inured to it. It's such a part of our daily life. It's so imbued in the culture. And the evil is so horrendous, we don't look at it. And the other side has all of these deflection techniques with the language game. They call it a woman's choice, but they don't talk about what the choice involves, right? And they talk about reproductive health. So that's why I started out with just exposing the bare face of the evil. We're talking, in the last 50 years in the United States alone, 66 million babies murdered in their mother's wombs.
Wow.
Just to comprehend the magnitude of that evil. 66 million babies murdered in their mother's wombs. And then there are all the many more millions of lives affected by that. Women who are grieving their abortion and not able to speak about it. They're shut down if they are utter word about it. So we need to be truly pro-life in the sense of we're anti-abortion and we're pro-life, helping these women to heal. We're the only ones who offer those resources. Offer pro-life and crisis pregnancy clinics that give women real choice, happy choices. So what I think we need to do is help people look at the brutal reality and evil of abortion straight in the face, so we can begin to move people to a change of heart.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. The other thing is just from a spiritual perspective, Your Excellency, too. I know we can talk about type of legislation that's going on or policies that'll be enacted coming out of the USCCB, but I mean, we really, I think, this is a spiritual thing. It's a demonic thing at the very core of it. You know, I think there needs to be greater prayer and fasting on the part of the laity. Is there anything planned in the future to call people to really recognize the fact that at the heart of this is a very dark evil, that this is a spiritual thing? And yeah, I mean, political action is important. Education is important. Activism is important. All these things are important. But it is the prayer and fasting that animates things. It's the prayer and fasting that will ultimately, I think, help to accelerate and bring about this change.
Yes, we definitely need that. To be honest, I've been rather disappointed at how ineffective that's been. We had about, I think it was about 10 years ago, we had a UFCCB initiated a call to prayer and fasting for life, liberty, and religious liberty and marriage. But the resource was on the website, but it did not get a lot of publicity, and I think very few Catholics even knew about it. When I consecrated our archdiocese to the Immaculate Heart of Mary a little over 3 years ago now, about 3.5 years ago, I call and I keep reminding people to live the consecration of praying the rosary daily, an hour of adoration a week, and fasting on Friday. That it's something we need to keep repeating over and over to get the message out. Absolutely, this is a spiritual battle. Absolutely, this is demonic. This is demonic, killing the babies. So we need to be engaged on that spiritual level, but it's something that we need to just push out there and repeat over and over so people begin to hear about the need for prayer and fasting on this.
Yeah. Well, what do you expect to come out of the USCCB's discussion on this issue? I mean, it's really not a fair question, but if you want to take a swing at it, what do you think will manifest?
Well, I don't want to make any predictions, but I would say I'm sensing an increasing concern and urgency among the bishops about saying something very clear and strong, because there is a lot of scandal in the technical sense. Catholics prominent in public life are misleading Catholics and non-Catholics, thinking that it's somehow acceptable to believe that it's okay to kill babies in the womb. I had one of my interviews with a secular media station. The interviewer was friendly, so he wasn't like trying to put me on the spot or anything, but sincerely asked, is it possible for a Catholic to be pro-abortion? And so the very fact that question can sincerely be asked shows that there is scandal here because people are confused. Catholics cannot condone killing innocent human life. So I think there's a sense of the urgency, a growing sense of urgency among the bishops to do something very strong and definitive about this.
So on that point, Your Excellency, and I don't mean any disrespect, but I mean, what about Nancy Pelosi, who professes to be a Catholic, or Joe Biden, who says he's a Catholic and carries his rosary beads? And I pray for our country every day, and especially for these leaders, because I pray the seeds of those the Catholic faith will really blossom in them. How does such intelligent people not recognize that this is an intrinsic evil, and how can they in any way champion and advance this? And we know what's happened with the Mexico City policy and all the other policies that are taking place. So, I mean, if you could address it, I'm assuming you've spoken to Nancy Pelosi. I know you must have. You're a good shepherd. I mean, how do we get our heads around this very public disconnect that these people seem to have? I don't know how they justify or rationalize their position.
I don't either. It's always perplexed me. It's always perplexed me. I just don't know. I don't know how someone with an education in medicine, a physician, could perform an abortion. And the physician, more than anyone else, knows what it involves. I just don't know. Yeah. So I would ask your listeners to please pray for me. I have had some conversations, and I'm continuing that process. I'm not at the end of that road yet.
Right.
So please pray for me. Please pray for our Catholics in public life, that they will consistently advocate for life, dignity of human life in every stage and in every condition.
Well, I promise you my prayers, and I know that those who are listening will be praying for you, for Nancy, for all those who hold public office, that very noble vocation. But Your Excellency, thank you for being vocal, for being, you know, clear in your writing, for your leadership, and for your willingness to come on today. It's an honor to be in your diocese, and it's an honor to talk with you today.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me on the show and for all you do as well.
Thank you. That's His Excellency, Archbishop Cordy de Leone. Please, as he asked, pray for him. Let's pray for Nancy Pelosi. I know Nancy and perhaps Joe Biden and these policies when it comes to life can really, you know, get your blood boiling, and it's so much easier to reciprocate with anger and hatred and oh, all sorts of other emotions towards them, but it is love, it is prayer, it is fasting, as I say, and it's not trite. I don't mean that in a trite way. That really will affect change. And it really, their immortal souls are what hang in the balance right now. So let's pray for them, and let's do so in earnest.
This is the Drew Mariani Show.
God bless you for all the work.
Listen in to the Chaplet of Divine Mercy.
The prayers that you have generated through the calls for the last number of years I've listened.
Every afternoon at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific
on Relevant.
Relevant Radio.
Well, the discussion about pro-abortion politicians and communion is getting hot, and it's actually reaching a high level of attention in Rome. The U.S. is, as far as I can tell, the only place where this discussion is really happening. It's not happening in Europe. Abortion really isn't on the table in Africa. It's only starting to make headway in South America now, and those who push for it in Asia, they're not Catholic, of course. So the discussion can seem like an annoyance, I think, to some in Rome. Well, those crazy Americans, right? They're obsessed with these sexual issues. You know, it's a good discussion to have because, as you heard Archbishop Cordiglione say, 66 million children have lost their lives since Roe v. Wade, since 1973, and politicians continue to push it, like our so-called Catholic president. Jen Psaki, if you're just joining me, the spokeswoman, said Joe Biden wants to put Roe v. Wade officially into the law of the land. And those politicians, personally, I think, need to be held accountable here on earth. And you know, there should be a warning to them of the accountability they're going to render when they stand before God and his throne. So I'll invite you to pray for them, as I've said. I'm joined right now by Father Robert Gall. He's an associate professor of ethics at the Pontifical University of the Holy Cross in Rome. And he's joining us there. Good evening, Father. Buonasera.
Thank you, Drew. It's great to be on the show, and especially after those amazing words from Archbishop Cordiglione.
Yeah, isn't he bold and clear? I love it. I mean, he doesn't pull punches, and I'm proud he's one of our great shepherds. Father, do you remember that, you know, well, let me put it this way. Do people recognize that, you know, this is an issue not just of life and death here on earth, but, I mean, there's spiritual consequences for this. And as I was saying to Archbishop Cordiglione, I know you probably heard that. Yeah, how does a Catholic like Joe Biden or Nancy Pelosi, we can go through a litany of others, not just the two of them, but they're in the headlines today. How do they not understand the eternal ramifications of this? And how do they not, from a temporal perspective, understand this intrinsic evil causes the destruction of human life?
What I found really overwhelming from Archbishop Cordiglione wasn't so much his force and clarity, which I'm used to coming from him, but there was a moment when you asked him exactly that question, and he responded very mildly and pensively and very slowly when he asked for prayers. And specifically, you challenged him about his conversations with Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, and that was his response, that pray for me. So I mean, this is ongoing, and as you've put it, it really is a kind of spiritual warfare. And I think that I would like to, in a sense, turn things upside down. I mean, we've been emphasizing abortion. Abortion is extremely important. It's a horrible evil, and it's not just in the United States. And yet U.S. politicians, including the president of the United States, is having a huge impact promoting abortion on the worldwide level. He recently removed the United States from this, what's called the Geneva Accord, that has to do with specifying at international levels before UN agencies that the right to health and to medical care and therefore to reproductive health does not include the right to abortion. This was a policy under Trump that he got the agreement of some 60 different nations in order to push for such an interpretation of UN rights speech in such a way that it would not include abortion, but this was just removed in Geneva by the U.S. government. So this is a really big issue, abortion, and it's a horrible evil, and yet I think we might be missing the picture in this debate if we don't focus primarily on the Holy Eucharist and on the need really to deepen our faith in the Holy Eucharist and to help our brothers and sisters in the faith to realize that Jesus is truly present, really present. there was this, just 2 years ago, the Pew Research came out with a study of Catholics, and it was shocking that they found that 7 out of 10 Catholics don't believe in the real presence. Now, it'd be interesting to look at how that maps out in terms of those who go to church and those who don't go to church. So when we're speaking about this this policy of the church and this pastoral practice of admonishing those who are engaged in such heinous behavior, like promoting abortion, that they ought not to approach for Holy Communion, it's because of our love for Jesus in the Holy Eucharist.
Yeah, it's such an important point. You know, and there's a lot of Catholics who, you know, want to see, you know, Canon 915 employed. They want to see these politicians, you know, perhaps even excommunicated. But you know, there's this debate, Father, over using the Eucharist as a political tool with the politicians. What would best be served? Do you sit down with Joe Biden or Nancy or whoever it may be and just try to educate them on the fact, hey, if you're a Catholic, then here's what we believe as Catholics regarding the true presence. I mean, how do we get that across them? Because you're right, maybe a different perspective, a different tact in the approach to this discussion might be revelatory.
In fact, I think that's exactly what Cardinal Ladaria is asking for in his letter to Archbishop Jose Gomez, which is really a letter to the U.S. Bishops Conference. So Cardinal Ladaria is the head of the Congregation for Doctrine of the Faith, you know, what used to be headed up by Cardinal Ratzinger before he became the Pope. And many people, the media has been interpreting, and certainly the media on the left is interpreting Ladaria's letter as being telling the U.S. bishops to hold their horses and not to come out with any document and really not to speak out on this issue. But that's not at all what he's saying. What he is doing in that letter is he is putting the primacy on the Holy Eucharist and on, I mean, people say dialogue, but it's really education, it's evangelization, and it's teaching, so that these bishops should be meeting with these politicians. It's not just an issue of politicians. It's also an issue of those who voted for these politicians in addition. And if they voted for them in some way thinking that they would be promoting these policies regarding abortion, for instance, that too is very serious. But of course, they've done so privately, because one votes in the booth and one's all alone, and there's secrecy with respect to one's ballot. But as you mentioned, Drew, and rightly, Canon 915, it has to do with the public scandal of someone who is obstinately persevering in manifest grave sin. And promoting this evil is certainly a manifest grave sin, about which, though, they may not be culpable. Right. Because we can't judge anyone's the intimacy of their conscience, and who knows what formation they've received in the past, who knows what understanding they have today of this reality. I mean, it's kind of shocking to say that, but and it's hard to fathom how someone could be so blind to this reality. And yet this is the reason why they need to be instructed, they need to be spoken with. And so one would certainly hope, and this is also what Cardinal Ladaria is saying, is that before telling them that they can't, but before refusing Holy Communion from them, like at the altar rail, they should not even approach until they have not only changed their position, but they should publicly rectify in order to heal the scandal that they've caused. So Cardinal Ladaria is really challenging the U.S. bishops to also unite among themselves and to all come together in that policy, which is actually the policy of the Universal Church, which is such that anyone who is committing such grievous public grave sins ought not to be approaching for Holy Communion. So let's definitely pray for Archbishop Cordleone, but for all of the bishops, including those who seem to be expressing confusion about this, like, for instance, Bishop McElroy, who has come out with a document that in a lot of ways is being read as in opposition to that of Archbishop Cordeleone. And Bishop McElroy mentions, well, there's a lot of other issues, like there's the issue of racism.
Right.
It's interesting to consider that in 1962, the Archbishop of New Orleans excommunicated a number of people because they refused to integrate the schools in his archdiocese because they were racists. So indeed, if someone were like committing sins of slavery or promoting racism directly, that could also be such a reason of great scandals.
Yeah, that's a great point, because racism is an intrinsic evil as well. So, I mean, it's a wonderful point. Yeah, you know, Father, we only have about a moment or two left. Our bishops, I think the church gets a bad rap. I mean, I think our bishops are trying to do the right thing, don't you? And they're doing it in a way that sometimes the mainstream media or those who have the power of the internet and are printing up articles don't necessarily know. And as a result, you know, the laity get all fired up over this. What's your thought on that?
Well, the polarization that's happening in politics is such that this is also being driven by social media, that we tend to relate more and more and have conversations more and more with people with whom we agree. Mm-hmm. And this can keep us from appreciating the other side, the other position, and make it hard for us to understand how someone could have an opinion that's different from ours. But, you know, among the bishops, they have their own, like, priorities with respect to other political issues, which would cause them to lean in one direction or another. But just before concluding, I wanted to mention these words of St. Paul. Whoever eats the bread or drinks the cup of the Lord unworthily sins against the body and blood of the Lord. This is from First Letter to Corinthians.
Amen to that.
Sometimes just before the sun comes up and goes down, your favorite Relevant radio station may be a little bit difficult to get on the actual radio, so you can just head over to our Relevant Radio app.
Relevant Radio, always crystal clear on the Relevant Radio app.
His Excellency, Bishop Robert Barron, he addressed this issue of not being able to get to the Eucharist.
Drew Mariani.
He said maybe this experience you're going through and I'm going through right now, maybe this hunger for the Eucharist is a good thing. Maybe the Lord, in His mercy, is allowing you, maybe for the first time in your life, to have a true appreciation for what it means to have the Eucharist in your life.
Bringing Christ to the world through the media. Relevant Radio.